The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'm going to be reading to you mainly from an interesting supplement in the Sunday New York Times, came out a couple of weeks ago. But I want to start off with an editorial message from the editor of AARP. And today's programming is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. And now, from the, it's a February-March issue of the AARP magazine. I thought I'd just read you this message from the editor, which is headlined, "Of Taxes, Medicare, and Social Security. In what is already shaping up to be a turbulent year, we want to hear from you. First, the good news. The magazine in your hands is officially the most widely read publication in the United States. In late 2017, according to the research firm GFK MRI, our readership reached 38.3 million, surpassing even People's. You took us into your home and shared us with family and friends, and for that we are profoundly grateful. But this magazine does not stand alone. It is just one part of AARP's efforts to develop a conversation with our members, the better to understand your wishes and advocate on your behalf. Whenever I write to smart people, I preface what I'm saying with these words. As you undoubtedly already know, that AARP also publishes the AARP Bulletin 10 times a year and provides the latest news on Medicare, Social Security, and other hot topics to 13 million visitors to our website, aarp.org, every month. We go in-depth on these topics with our award-winning books. There's also a daily news feed for mobile phones called AARP Now, an active Facebook page and YouTube channel, and monthly and weekly e-newsletters you can sign up for. Now, the not-so-good news. There is great instability in the nation's capital, and it will touch all of our lives in 2018 and beyond. The ultimate result of the tax bill that passed just before Christmas is up for debate. Will the tax cuts increase the nation's deficits? Economists and other experts uniformly say yes. Will they affect you as an American over the age of 50? Yes, they undoubtedly will, warns our CEO Joanne Jenkins, because as day leads tonight, tax cuts lead to calls for greater spending cuts, which are likely to include dramatic cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, and other important programs serving older Americans. And AARP will fight such cuts with all our might. Our promise to you in 2018 is that we will bring you the latest information on the issues that affect you and offer you ways to join AARP in defending vital programs. Older Americans need these programs. We've paid for them, and we deserve them, as you undoubtedly already know. Bob." And Bob is Robert Love, who is editor-in-chief of AARP magazine. Now, I'm going to read, the first thing I'm going to read of several articles in the New York Times that have to do with us folks in retirement and age, is because this is very close to my heart, as I am a choral singer. "Singing Their Way Through Retirement. Joining a chorus can result in a life with fewer pills, less depression, and most important, more fun." This is by Noah Weiland. And let me see where we are. Washington. "When retirees settle into life after work, an inevitable question arises. What kinds of commitments can still be made to friends, neighbors, and organizations? In the nation's capital, more than 1,000 retirees have found a convincing answer: singing. The nonprofit Encore Creativity for Older Adults Choral Program is the largest in the country for people over 55, with more than 1,100 singers and 21 choral groups in the Washington metro area and more than 700 singers in five other states. Two new programs will open in New York in March. What started in 2007 as three choruses has blossomed into hundreds of singers ringing the district, belting out music from Broadway and the Great American Songbook. This year, the D.C. area groups will combine to perform at the Kennedy Center's Concert Hall the day after Christmas. Its founder and director, Gene Kelly, a former classical singer, led a three-year study conducted by George Washington University that observed 150 singers older than 55. She found that participants in professionally led choral programs take fewer medications, experience less depression, and make fewer visits to doctors. "You've given so much of yourself," said Debbie DeLoney, a retiree in Encore's downtown Washington choral group. "Now you're singing and people are listening to you. You feel like, wow, here I am." Here is a look at four other retirees who have turned to singing to give their lives a new feeling and meaning. Howard Smith, 89. Mr. Smith is one of the oldest members of Encore. After working as a Foreign Service officer at the State Department for decades, he retired and moved into Goodwin House, a continuing care facility in Falls Church, Virginia. Even while working at the highest levels of diplomacy in Congo, Saudi Arabia, South Korea, and Mexico, he had a nagging impulse to sing. He remembers being a young boy watching his mother perform on stage, wanting to know how it felt to make people happy with music. When he retired from the government, he worried that pursuing a career in music was a lost cause. Encore helped renew his enthusiasm. "Music is life," he said. "I know that if I keep going to rehearsals for what we're doing this coming season, that everything will be fulfilled. It's what I really wanted to do. I didn't have that opportunity professionally, but I've had it here." Even after he stopped driving, he maintained a full life at Goodwin House, apart from the Encore rehearsals there, as a bingo caller, as a fundraiser for holiday gifts for the staff, as a founder of a group that gathers to read plays together. "Singing to me is the best medicine," he said. "It makes you want to live a little longer." Tom Hoppin, 79. Mr. Hoppin is a sailor and member of the Annapolis area's branch of Encore. He moved from Washington to a cottage in Shadyside, Maryland, after he retired as a banker and employee at a research firm that studied aging. He has examined the ways singing improves physiological and mental health. His home on the water is small, so he uses his car and its sound system to practice his part, along with CD recordings of Encore's arrangements. "It's a little like going to the gym in that you are learning how to breathe better and bend over better and stretch your muscles better," he said. "People increase the range of their voices, start being able to hit high notes." Mr. Hoppin sings with former staff members of the Naval Academy and NASA, and with several widows who tell him that singing has helped them recover from loss. "We are mutually dependent on one another," he said. "There's a sense of reliance." And he added, "There's always an element of the spiritual side in the sense that we are living out of our own selves into a creative art." Liz Diamond, 71. "I've always been a bit of ham and a bit of a show-off," said Ms. Diamond, a former Alzheimer's Association employee who came to Washington from Britain in 1979. She is part of Encore's chapter in Glen Echo, Maryland. Singing has helped convince her of the importance of community building in retirement, of living a home life rich with the arts. It has also clarified to her what feels most meaningful about a life in the United States. "Having those commitments in retirement is important," she said. Her choral group also allows her to make new friends. The kinds of careers specific to Washington mean they always have something to talk about. If you threw a stone in our chorus, somebody has written a book or done something rather important with their lives, she said. At home, she uses a bedroom to practice her parts for encore. I have to go in there and screech my head off, she said. The cat leaves the room in disgust. Tony Tambasco, 78. Mr. Tambasco's home study is full of texts he used as a religious studies professor at Georgetown University, where he taught for 35 years. When he joined Encore, his academic haven turned into one for music. He set up a Bose sound system that he uses to rehearse his parts. Counting notes in the music has helped keep his mind sharp and has brought out a new side of him. We're singing a piece now that says, Viva la Musica, he said. It's a piece that it's very melodic. I get choked up when I'm singing it sometimes. It's hard to even sing it because I feel like I want to tear up in the middle of it. The music has an effect on mind and heart, he said, adding, it makes for a happy life. Now, here's another article from the Times on budgeting. The headline is, No Pension? You can pensionize your savings. Researchers have developed the Spend Safely in Retirement strategy aimed at middle-income people. By Anne Carnes. After years of working, many people face the challenge of converting their savings into a sustainable flow of income in retirement. Some researchers think they have a practical solution. Workers should take steps to pensionize their nest eggs. The transition from saving to spending was once relatively simple, at least for retirees with traditional pensions offering predictable payments. But such plans are dwindling. In 2017, only 16% of Fortune 500 companies offered a defined benefit plan, traditional or hybrid, to new hires, down from 59% among the same employers in 1998, according to Willis Towers Watson. As employers have shifted to investment-based retirement accounts funded largely with worker savings. While employers have taken steps to automate employee contributions to workplace plans, retirement experts say few offer options for automatic payment plans in retirement. That means many retirees face a jigsaw puzzle of payments requiring them to piece together an income from their workplace retirement stashes and individual retirement accounts to supplement Social Security. One option is to use some of their savings to buy an annuity, an insurance contract that pays out income over time, but many of them are complex and larded with fees. The complexity often pushes people to wing it, says Steve Vernon, a research scholar in the Financial Security Division at Stanford University's Center on Longevity. Retirees may then spend too much, jeopardizing their long-term financial security. Mr. Vernon and two colleagues think they have a workable solution developed in collaboration with the Society of Actuaries and outlined in a report in November, the Spend Safely in Retirement strategy. It focuses mainly on middle-income people, those who have saved perhaps $100,000, as much as $1 million, as they approach retirement, who generally lack traditional pensions but have workplace 401k-type investment plans, or IRAs. Wealthier people with professional planners, however, can also use it. The strategy helps older workers mimic a steady pension with their own retirement savings with three steps: work longer, delay taking Social Security to maximize payments, and set a basic budget using an amount that you are required to withdraw from your retirement accounts anyway, effectively pensionizing your savings. Working longer, at least part-time, can help cover basic living expenses and preserve savings. That in turn helps enable the second step, the postponement of Social Security benefits, ideally until age 70, to maximize those payments. For each year past your normal retirement age that you delay claiming Social Security benefits, your payments increase by 8% until age 70. The automatic increases stop at that point, although adjustments for inflation continue. Taking benefits sooner, in contrast, say at 62, the earliest age for taking benefits, significantly reduces your check. Robert Siwa, 74, of Findlay, Ohio, said he filed for Social Security benefits at age 62, then worked off and on for a few years before fully retiring. He didn't have a pension, but he had received a payout earlier from a company profit-sharing plan, which he invested in an IRA. Then in 2011, the annual premium on a life insurance policy he held skyrocketed at renewal because of a health problem. He felt it was important to keep the policy, so he returned to work part-time to pay for it. He works on call, driving cars between auto dealerships. "I really didn't want to take it out of retirement savings," he said. "It's a balancing act." Cindy Hunsell, president of the nonprofit Women's Institute for Secure Retirement, said she often is asked what women should do if they lack retirement savings. "Keep working," she said. "That's your answer. Where else are you getting 8%? If 70 isn't possible, working even an extra year or two can help. The third step of the strategy, warning retirement jargon ahead, is to draw down a percentage of your retirement accounts each year as income using the Internal Revenue Service's required minimum distribution amount as a guideline. That's the money retirees typically must withdraw from most types of retirement accounts each year after age 70 and a half. Called an RMD, the amount is calculated each year as a percentage of your retirement savings based on an IRS formula that factors in your life expectancy. So if you have $400,000 in a retirement account at age 71, you must withdraw about $14,600 according to the IRS worksheet. That translates to about $1,217 a month. The RMD wasn't designed as a budgeting tool. Rather, it was created to make sure Uncle Sam collected his taxes after letting retirement savings grow tax-deferred for years. But it can work as an income plan, too, Mr. Vernon said. The withdrawal rate progresses from about 3.65% to 4.2% of assets for people in their early 70s, according to the IRS's chart, and continues to rise gradually over time. Although you don't have to take a distribution before age 70 and a half, the approach can be used to calculate a safe withdrawal rate at younger ages. Mr. Vernon suggests 3.5% to keep things simple. If someone can't work until age 70, Mr. Vernon says, it's preferable to cut back on spending and dip into savings to meet basic needs for food, clothing, and housing for a few years. In order to delay taking Social Security, that may mean less savings overall, but the trade-off is higher guaranteed Social Security income. Mr. Vernon and his co-authors, Wade Fowle and Joseph Tomlinson, analyzed about 300 variations of retirement income strategies and found that the safe spending approach generally wrings the most out of available benefits for middle-income retirees while avoiding excess complexity. Mr. Vernon urges potential retirees to think of Social Security payments as their steady paycheck to cover the basics, while the money from annual RMDs, which may fluctuate based on investment returns, represents a bonus. The approach isn't perfect. For one, it assumes that Social Security will continue as it exists today, although the program is subject to political risk as the population ages. Mr. Vernon also cautions that it's important for married couples to plan carefully when claiming Social Security so the surviving spouse gets the highest amount possible should one of them die. Some retirees are not even aware of RMD rules, said David C. John, a senior strategic policy advisor at the AARP Public Policy Institute, despite hefty penalties for failing to take them, 50% of the money not withdrawn, and may be uncomfortable calculating them. Mr. John said he recently conducted a retirement seminar and some older people were in tears because they only learned they had missed a withdrawal when they received a tax bill reflecting the penalty. In theory, he said, retirement plan sponsors alert account holders about required withdrawals, but it may not always happen. Some financial planners say they doubt that basing a budget on Social Security plus an RMD will support the lifestyle many people hope for in retirement unless they have saved larger amounts of cash. If the RMD isn't enough, you still have to cut expenses, said Jennifer Lumman, a financial planner in Santa Cruz, California. Retirees are dubious. It wouldn't be enough, said Nancy Hall, 71, of Princeton, New Jersey, who retired as a researcher with the New Jersey State Health Department 15 years ago. Her husband is also retired. Ms. Hall said she was fortunate to have a government pension, but worried that it won't stretch as far as planned because the state had eliminated cost of living increases. We thought we were on Easy Street, she said with a laugh. She claimed Social Security at 64, but wonders if she should have waited. Mr. Vernon said retirees should consider the Spending Safely proposal a baseline and modify it to fit their circumstances. Meanwhile, he is acting on his own proposal, retired for a decade from his full-time career as a consulting actuary. He's now 64 and working just enough in his encore career as a researcher, he said, to delay his Social Security benefits, hopefully until age 70. Age 70, Mr. Vernon said, is the new 65. Now, I think we've got time for one more article from the Times Supplement on retirement. A career change? I'll drink to that. After managing publicity and event promotion operations and co-founding a film festival, a Texas woman opened her own distillery, by Michael Hoinsky. From Blanco, Texas, Marsha Milam's father struck gold drilling in oil patches in Illinois back in the day. Ms. Milam also struck gold when the 86-proof single-barrel bourbon whiskey she makes under the brand name Ben Milam was awarded a coveted double gold at the 2017 San Francisco World Spirits Competition. The accolade was a breakthrough for her upstart distillery an hour southwest of Austin in Hill Country, an area flush with breweries, wineries, and other distilleries. Ben Milam, named for her first cousin six times removed, a hero of the Texas Revolution, opened its tasting room last March and was fielding 10 phone calls a day from stores trying to stock its product a month later after winning the award. It was nuts, said Rick Monroe, the head distiller. Ms. Milam was unaware that he had entered the competition with a single-barrel bourbon, which had been distilled in oak barrels in Tennessee, aged in Kentucky, and then brought to Texas for additional aging and bottling. Ben Milam now distills this same mash bill on site, but it requires at least 2 years of aging before it can achieve status as straight bourbon. I was like, I can't believe you submitted to that, Ms. Milam said. I told Rick, don't tell anybody. And man, a few weeks later, we get this email at 8 o'clock on a Monday morning. Making whiskey has forced Ms. Milam to downshift from the fast pace of the entertainment business. After graduating from the University of Texas in 1979, she managed publicity and event promotion operations, mostly in the music business, and in 1993 she co-founded the Austin Film Festival. Now, at 60-something, Ms. Milam has joined a growing contingent of female distillers and whiskey enthusiasts. In addition to the single-barrel bourbon, she sells a 90-proof rye and a 114-proof barrel-proof bourbon in bulbous French bottles. The labels are masculine, bearing an image of Ben Milam with a musket, yet elegant. The label designed on the barrel-proof bourbon was inspired by Coco Chanel perfume. Ms. Milam said, a young woman approached her at a recent tasting. She said, I think for women, drinking whiskey is the last frontier of equality, Ms. Milam said. And I was like, oh my God, I love you. Ms. Milam switched gears after she had a mountaintop experience in 2015. One of her VIP clients, Jimmy Vaughn, the Grammy-winning Austin blues guitarist and singer, called to ask for a favor. He wanted Ms. Milam to help with his speech inducting Stevie Ray Vaughan, his deceased younger brother, into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and to lend emotional support at the ceremony. She has a smooth class about her that makes everything cool, Mr. Vaughan said. I'm sure that she's going to do great in the whiskey business because whatever she does works. Ms. Milam said she figured she would never do anything in the music business to top that, and it freed her to pursue other ventures. She had been taking distilling classes at Koval, which operates out of Chicago's first distillery, and booked a trip to the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. It was all so seductive, the bluegrass and the beautiful horses, but especially the big old rickhouses where the whiskey reels in the years in wood barrels. I really thought about coming home, selling everything I have, and moving to Kentucky and getting a job there, Ms. Milam says. She continued apprenticing at Koval, and in June 2016 acquired property in Blanco about 100 yards off U.S. 281 behind an auto parts shop. Inside Ben Milam, a modest bar area is accented with periwinkle boots, a typewriter, a cow skull, and a canvas bearing two old photographs of her mother, Rosie, and her father, Merle. The Austin artist Bob Wade, known as Daddy-O, had spliced the photos together to appear as one, which he then tinted by hand. Mr. Monroe, the head distiller, visited with South African tourists while Jordan Osborne, the head brewer, tended to the mash in a production space decorated with a giant Texas flag. Ms. Milam will not disclose how much she has invested in Ben Milam, saying only, "Mucho grande." She says her trends are good in financial terms, but she contends that she has never pursued money, only experience. Still, she is riding a national trend toward profitability. 15 years ago, the United States had roughly a dozen distilleries. Today, it has more than 1,700, said Dan Garrison of Garrison Brothers Distillery in High, Texas, a board member of the American Craft Spirits Association. It's a great, clean industry, Mr. Garrison said. It's creating a number of good, high-paying, well-qualified, well-educated jobs. Ms. Milam recognizes that ultimately what she is doing is paying tribute to her father, whom she regards as the driving force in her life. An only child, she savors the memory of being six and having him wake her after midnight to drive to the oil patch to watch the roughnecks watch them work their magic. She realized that it was physical, dangerous work, but that it came with great rewards. In the oil business, whiskey was currency, she said. Somebody did you a favor? Get him a bottle of whiskey. Now we've only got a few seconds left, so I'm going to leave you with a haiku, a tiny little poetry form. It's only 17 syllables, and it's about nature. This is called Dogwoods. Dogwoods, edge forests like shy girls in white dresses, arrived at the dance. And now, it looks like we are running out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I certainly hope you'll come back and listen next week and that you've enjoyed today. I'm Florence Nash, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And the programming for today has been generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long till next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.